Hello and welcome to a very special The Great Cricketer podcast. My name is Ian Higgins and I'm joined by Dave Edwards. And Dave, we are at the SCG, and by at the SCG I mean we're physically at the SCG, not just where the test is.
We're physically at the SCG. We're in the Cricket New South Wales office. We've been offered tickets,
yes.
Media passes by yes. Cricket Australia, very generous gesture by them. And we've taken advantage of that. We're here, we're recording live, and we're at a dead rubber test.
So we should caveat this, that we know there is a humming, there is an air conditioning vent above us. This isn't the usual pristine quality that you'll be getting, you know, over Skype when we have Sam Perry from London involved as well, and then a caller from, you know, somewhere else like Pakistan or something.
Yeah.
But so we are aware that this sound quality is going to be a little bit diminished, but we are hoping to give you a podcast each day that this test runs, and hopefully that's just going to be 3 days because we're busy. Yeah, and we like the holidays. So Dave, we're here as you said rightly, that we've been given a chance to be in the press box. It's fucking awesome to be in there. It's cool because you get to hang out with cool people and everyone's nice to you.
You get to see some of the greats. I saw Gus Wallen with two sausage rolls at lunch. I walked into the toilets and I was at a urinal, and there was another bloke at the... There were three urinals in a row. I was at one end, another bloke was another, and Bill Laurie walked in and he looked at the vacant urinal and went, nah, and he went to the cubicle. I was really hoping...
He got his keys out.
Yeah. Allegedly. All allegedly.
That didn't happen.
No.
You can't say that about one of the greats, yeah.
No,
so, I mean, it's like, it is actually funny when you see people in real life. Like, for instance, like we saw Mike Atherton today.
Yep.
Obviously, we were lucky enough to have him on the podcast, and he was very nice to us as well. Obviously, like, he just did Gideon Hay a favour and he doesn't care who the fuck we are.
No.
That's kind of the impression that I get a lot of the times. Like, the people who are, like, in a higher level, they don't really care who you are. Like, all the low-level journalists, they're like, you guys are cool. But then, like, when we're trying to, like, you know, talk to people who are famous...
You just see this vacant look. Like, Athos was, like, looking through me. Like, he wasn't actually looking into my eyes. Good bloke.
Yeah, good bloke.
No, thanks, Athos.
It was, it's really funny. I mean, obviously, Gideon Hayes in the press box as well. Just all these nice people. So, you know, I saw Graham Swan. Is this just a
talking about like things that we saw,
and no one cares.
No one cares. It's so self-serving.
All right, so let's talk about the cricket. Yeah. So we will get Will McPherson and Ed Cowan's in the show as well a little bit later. So hopefully, as I say, we'll get to do this to you each day. We'll get to have a little Ashes memories, little SCG memories of players that have played here. But the cricket so far today, I don't know about you, I've hardly fucking watched the ball.
I haven't watched the ball. It's looking like a pretty pedestrian test. It's going to filter out. Maybe there'll be a result. Australia probably will win. It won't be great, will it?
It's just a shocking bowling attack for England, isn't it? I mean, they've got Tom Curran playing his second test, Mason Crane test debut. Ali's hardly bowled the ball. You've got Broad and Anson who are going to have to bowl 200 overs each. When we said this in last night's podcast, the main podcast, including our good friend and leader, Sam Perry. But it just looks like, I mean, Steve Smith, how are they going to get Steve Smith out? Like if you see off Broad and Anderson, it just runs for days, isn't it? I mean, like, that's the issue here, that Australia will probably only have to bat once.
Steve Smith's just batting so well. And how do you bowl to him? I don't understand how you bowl to him when he's in that frame of mind. He's been in form for 4 years. Like, I don't think it's form anymore. He's just really good at batting.
Yeah.
And he loves batting as well. He's on record saying, I just love batting.
He batted so much that he didn't need to have a hit before a test match, because he batted so much in the last test match that he batted.
He needed to have a break.
He didn't have a break. Got some balls today?
Nah, mate. Want some throw downs? Nah.
Isn't that like, he's not a good-looking run scorer as well, isn't that like what it comes to? Like, I would, you know, Kohli, for instance, is like, he's really aesthetic.
Yeah.
You know, even Joe Root, like, it's just crabbing. I'm sick of watching him crab. Fuck, he's good, though.
There are runs, but some runs are more recall than others.
Yeah.
I think it was Orwell who said that.
Isn't it funny when we're in the press box and the journalists, like, talk to us about the cricket and we say stuff like, yeah, but Steve Smith is ugly.
Yeah. CIA gave us media passes. We have no insights on cricket.
But more people listen to us than anyone else. All right, Edos, we'll ask for some hashtag AskTGCs during the week, but one has come in opportunistically. People don't need to hear us talk more than once a week, so we'll keep this nice and short, but there isn't a hashtag AskTGC that is in front of you, if you'd be so kind to ask it.
Yeah, sure. So this one comes from Anthony Forsyth via Twitter. He says, G'day, knackers. As a yuck... Park cricketer.
Sorry, what did he call us?
Knackers.
Knackers.
I don't know.
Okay.
I think it's a actually don't know what that is. Anyway,
okay.
As a yuck park cricketer,
right,
who's played more senior cricket on synthetic than turf, it's fair to say I lacked any serious amount of social capital in the Melbourne cricket scene. Couple that with a set of pipes that had me nicknamed Twigger by the old brigade during my first senior game at the third grade of the Box Hill Reporter Cricket League. After several club changes to escape this nickname and my horrible form with bat and ball, I was greeted at my current club with the new nickname of Foreskin, a genius play on my surname, Forsyth. Thankfully, my dad has never come to watch me play, or he may have been even more embarrassed by the ridicule of our shared surname than my none for 32 off 8 and streaky 11 not batting at 9. Though luck has been, through luck, this has been shortened to Skinner in recent series, which I believe is the result of my increased standing at the cricket club. It's my theory that my social capital has drastically increased through a fortuitous connection to a high-level cricketer. Mm. On the first day of prep, I was lucky enough to become best friends with a kid by the name of P. Hanscom.
Right.
Wait. That's too obvious. Let's call him Peter H. Throughout our formative years, he showed all the signs of becoming an elite sportsman. And when he made his test debut last year, my stocks had never been higher. Naturally, I capitalised with tactical changing of my profile picture to show my close connection to the inner sanctum of the Australian test team. However, recently, my anonymous friend has been unceremoniously dropped for having a yuck technique, mediocre rig and a salad that's no more appetising than 500-gram pre-packed coleslaw that's been marked down at Woolworths. My question is, how do I distance myself from his failure and maintain my status as an alpha of my small pond? I've already deleted the profile pic, but people are still asking me about my connection. Please help me, TGC. I can't go back to Foreskin.
Isn't?
Regards, Anthony Skinner Forsyth. What going on?
I mean, where to begin? So, I mean, like, isn't this just the the curse of knowing someone who's famous because you are living and dying by their successes?
Yeah.
But he's bought into that by changing his Facebook profile picture. You know, he needs
bold move.
And this is like for us, when it was announced that Cowan was dropped from New South Wales and therefore he wasn't able to get us tickets to the Boxing Day Test because he wouldn't be playing for Australia.
Yeah. We dropped all association.
Yeah, but he keeps calling us, and it's hard to looking forward to talking to him later. what's he asking? Like, how does he disassociate himself?
Oh, he's basically asking. Well, he's deleted the profile pic of himself with Peter H.
Okay,
But people are still asking about his connection,
right?
And he's trying to find out how does he distance himself from that failure yet maintain his own social capital in his small circle. I don't really know what the answer is there.
I mean, the thing is, like, Hanscom's not playing any T20 cricket either because he's just kind of just sub-fielding at the moment, just taking catches of the whacker, He's giving throwdowns, which is, the unsexy work. So until Hanscom gets out there and scores, like, a double ton in Shield.
So you're saying that it's all on Hanscom. There's nothing, actually, that Foreskin can do here.
Nothing Foreskin can do.
Hanscom needs to go and, sign a mad IPL contract, get some levers, bomb some sixes, some maximums over there. And come back and do the same in the BBL and get back on the test side, and then he can resume the profile pick.
Yeah, I think that's the key phrase. Yeah, resume the profile pick. I mean, like, because if you're not living your life via social media, then what's the point of living at all?
Always said that. Well, hope we'll clear that up for him. I don't think we did.
All right. Well, we're signing off this bit. Ed Cowan and Wilmy First are going to come up, and we'll see you again tomorrow.
Well, here we are again, a new year, 2018, and here we are again in the Cricket New South Wales offices. Yourself, Pez is obviously in London, but I'm here with you, and we are joined by probably the best friend of the podcast. We've had a lot of people on. We've reached 30 episodes as of yesterday, so we're to the 30s now, and what better way to mark a good 30 than to bring Edward Cowan onto the program. How are you, mate?
You're making me blush with such accolades. Look, it's the Sydney test when Edo's pulls out the Czech shirt, the chino shorts, and the brand new blue boat shoes that have just stepped off the island.
Could you see your face in them?
Almost.
They were glistening.
They are glistening.
Not as good as your wooden Hawaii watch, which is just an alpha power play if I've ever seen one.
Welcome to the members bar if I've ever seen one.
So this is a podcast and no one can actually see the things that we're talking about.
We're trying to paint a picture.
Imagery. Yeah. So this is the 31st podcast and Ted's been on 28 of them. So this is... So welcome.
He's a major shareholder.
So Ted, we'll ask you the first question about the SCG, your memories of the SCG. You've played two test matches here because you told me that before we just pushed record. So tell us about some of your memories about playing Test cricket at the SCG especially?
Well, my main memories involve missing out on really flat wickets, mm-hmm. Which, you know, so usually when Michael Clarke got his 300, I was kind enough to offer up my wicket so that he could bat on the flattest wicket of all time and then I could eat ice.
Stats.
That's right. Yeah. And then I could eat ice cream for 2.5 days. So, you know, crying into the bowl of, you know, Peters with a bit of Milo on top. Just thinking, this could have been me. This could have been the making of me. So that's one memory. The other is Dave Warner kindly running me out on the second flattest wicket of all time against Sri Lanka the following year, and then having to endure Ian Chappell curse my inability to run between the wickets despite being burnt like an absolute piece of toast.
Mm. I remember when you were playing Test cricket, there was like, you got run out of the bowler's end once, and like, there was like...
That was my fault.
There was like an hour where they said you're holding the bat in the wrong hands. Have you?
I was. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I YouTube that quite a bit, actually. yeah, I got 136 that day. I'd probably I'd still be batting if I didn't get run out of the bowler's end. But on this occasion, that was my fault. On this occasion, it wasn't my fault. And the Sri Lankans were flat. They were 2-0 down. Mm. Mitch Johnson had them running scared. Mm. Tommy Parker rolled out a genuine rolled piece of mud at the SCG that, you know, just had, you know, 300 written all over it. Mm. I was sitting back in the sheds after 20 minutes having just been run out.
So you were saying before about Michael Clarke's 300, not his red inker as well. What are some of your memories about watching him bat that day? Like, what was he saying when he came back into the sheds after? Like, just tell me everything about it.
Would have come back in the sheds, what, 5 or 6 times?
Plenty of times. Yeah. It was actually incredibly hot. So I just remember him always coming in, you know, for a guy that's always immaculately groomed. He was dripping with sweat. Mm. And I just couldn't believe he kept going out, you know, actively going out there and wanting to put himself through another 2 hours of, you know, the furnace that was the SCG. But he was so hungry. It was incredible. The look in his eye, the steely determination to, you know, not just give it away on 103 and say that.
Yeah,
thank
you
very much. I've just celebrated with a little Toyota jump and let's get on with it. But 329 later, it was actually incredible to watch.
Is he one of those players, like, when he comes into the dressing room, what's his kind of, I guess, routine? If he comes in, he's on 59, 100, 150. Does he go to into the corner by himself? Does he reflect with a few senior stakeholders?
Texting, Snapchat, Instagram?
Not really. I thought, you know,
just from... go straight to the valuables bag.
From memory, you know, guys, you let guys stay in their little bubble because it takes immense concentration to be performing at that level. So if they come off and if they're talkative, you provide the conversation. If they just want to sort of recede to the background, have
just
a shower.
Mirror them.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. Let them do the walking and you just fall in line. Yeah.
So while we are talking about the SCG, we'll just stay in class
three. One other memory.
Oh, yeah, okay, go on. Because
That was Mike Hussey's last test match and we had a little small chase in the fourth innings and I was batting. Mm. And all I heard while we were 2 down at the time was, Hussey. Count. And there was no one there day 5. You know, day 5 it was like 20. Count, Cowan. We want to see Hussey. Hussey. And then the whole crowd started, Hussey.
Yeah, Dave's always been good to start a chant.
He's been good like that.
So when Michael Clarke got his 300 here, like, how hard is it to get a guy out when he's batting that well? So, like, the comparison right now would be Steve Smith, right, who's just batting Bradman-esque, to use that phrase. But, like, how hard is it at that level, like, to international level, when a guy's batting best in his life? Like, how actually hard is it for the bowling team to get someone out like that?
Yeah, I think it just relies on them making a half error and, you know, a little bit of luck here and there. And, you know, in Smithy's case or Michael's case in that series, because I think he got 200 the week before as well.
Right. Yeah, it's pretty good.
You know, things are just going your way and they're relaxed and in the flow and you have to make a mistake and that tends not to happen.
Mm. So end of the series usually is a Sydney test match. Like, how big is the circuit once you leave?
Massive, yeah, which is the same as every other test if you win.
I was through the circuit.
I think I was almost a functioning alcoholic during the time of the test team because we were winning games. Yeah. Yeah, we had a good team. Ponting, Hussey, Harris, Clark, Johnson, you know.
Cowan.
Great circuiters, yeah.
So what happens, like, you win a game, obviously the procession, the Southern Cross, beer and champagne strewn across all of you.
Australia, you fucking beauty, yeah.
Is there a pre-arranged circuit or does someone everyone kind of stand and hold fort and go, boys, we're going here, we're going there, we're going to do this. This is the circuit that we're planning out. Or is it pre-planned? Is it a Pat Howard initiative with
Because I think you know, some guys, you know, who would go on to be test captains would want to leave the group to go to dinner. For instance, other guys want to stay in the
dressing room. Neil Perry restaurant.
Sorry, so, I hijacked your question there, but yeah.
Tell us.
Great question. Everyone really only cares about the circuit.
At all levels
of cricket and the Australian team's no difference. So you win, you'll settle in with a few beers. It's obviously up to the song captain.
The song captain.
Who was the song captain when you were?
Mike Hussey.
Okay.
But there was a handover, wasn't there?
There was to Nathan Lyons in that last test.
So that's a celebration in itself.
Mm. It was, yeah. Mm. And so it's up to them to decide when and where. And that can be anywhere between 30 seconds after walking the shed and, you know, probably the most drawn-out affair was probably 5 hours after the Adelaide test against India, which was awesome as well. We sang it in the old scoreboard, which was phenomenal. So, you know, it's up to them to kind of get credit. It's like trying to surprise your girlfriend with a new date. Eventually, you're going to run out of ideas, but, you know, a few fresh ones pop up every now and again. And then you sit in the change room, pat each other on the back, and then the young guys, you know, the guys with the families will tend to, you know, potter off home. And the young guys will kind of get together in the corner and whisper a few sweet nothings as to where the party might continue.
Mm. And obviously you'd consult those whose home state and city it is. Hussey, being, you know, from an out-of-towner, wouldn't be that familiar with the Sydney test circuit.
No, that's right. And it obviously depends on what night you finish as well. Yeah. You know, everyone knows that, you
Monday
know...
Monday scuba.
That's exactly right. If it's on a Monday, we're at scuba. Tuesday, R&B night, Oxford Street. Saturday, some people might...
Thursday, the old Greenwood in 1999.
Followed by blueberries.
No one outside of Sydney is going to get this, but it's funny for us. So when you're sitting in the dressing room, so the SCG dressing rooms are quite storied and they're ancient, is what I'm saying. Like, when you're sitting in there, that's got to be fucking great, doesn't it? If you want a test match, it's like all this history and these lockers, like Bradman played there, you know, all these great names. Just anywhere Bradman played, you know, Peter Shemoval,
or North Sydney.
Like, is it actually quite like, is this, like, am I romanticising it too much by thinking that it's actually, like, really, like, those would be actually some of your nicest memories playing test cricket?
I'd say even my nicest Shield memories would be having won a Shield game, sitting in the SCG chain rooms, drinking beer, ordering pizza, security guard gets pissed off, he's still there at 2 o'clock in the morning.
So hang on, so you order pizza in and a delivery guy comes into the dressing rooms.
Well, no, you go to the gate, you say gate SCG, he hands it through the grill because everything's shut up.
Don't let him in here. No,
because you've got to sign in at security. It's just literally the thing. They put it underneath the grill.
Uber Eats just all on the app.
That's exactly right.
Okay. So just one more on this, Dave. You got anything else? But your memories. Like, what's it like for you coming back here now to the SCG? Like, during a test match, like, do you get stopped a lot by the members? Like, obviously you never go outside
booed.
Members. Hussey, we want Hussey.
That's exactly right.
It's a safe space for you here.
Is it nice to come back here for the test matches? Do people still, you know, speak to you nicely, or do they ask you to come on a podcast?
They asked me to come on a podcast. I'm a very inconspicuous type. You know, I was out the back having a few beers last year, and even you didn't recognise me. And he goes, and he's walking past with the media accreditation on.
Just looking at Chris Rogers.
That's exactly what he was. Have you seen Bucky Rogers? Please, but no. It's an
annual occasion.
It is, I'm lucky enough to, you know, grow up with the Sydney Test as a moment every year that I would go and really indulge in Test cricket, and had so many great childhood memories that, you know, regardless of the memories of playing into, and lucky enough to be selected into, but to watch even, you know, the team now, it gives me great enjoyment. Tend to be, as you say, out the back on the big screen, but keeping a low profile, but it's a great test match.
Mate, it's been great to have you. I think we'll let you go and get on with it. I know you've got big plans for this afternoon. I can see that eye twitching at the thought of beer. It's a clean skin. Ed Cowan, thanks, mate. And we'll see you around the traps this test match.
Can't wait.
Here goes, here we are in a different room now. Different guest. We're in the Cricket New South Wales trophy room. Wonderful memorabilia all around us. And we've brought in some international flavour as our second guest of the show, Times cricket correspondent, Australian circuiting extraordinaire, Will McPherson, you're a friend of the show, and welcome to the show again.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be back.
So the day's play, Will, at the time of recording, it is 5:10 in the afternoon. There's still about 25 overs left in the day's play. So what you're going to say is going to be completely wrong by the end. But let's cover the day's play so far. England won the toss, and they had a stick.
Yeah, this is actually a bit like writing for an English newspaper during the Ashes, because by the time it reaches doormat, it's completely out of date, and you look like a complete tit. So this is going to be exactly the same, but I'll just find out soon.
We'll do two recordings.
I'll just find out sooner, but I'm an idiot. So, England have won the toss today. They've had a bat. It looked a bit of a... It was a lot of good toss-to-lose chat in the round, wasn't there, when it was a bit cloudy early doors because of winter and rain and... but England, it's been a pretty middling day, hasn't it? They've lost three wickets as things stand. Probably going to be 5 or 6, maybe 10 by the time they're done. Two of them were Mark Stoneman and James Vince, who kind of have done what they've done all series. They've probably summed up England's series a little bit. Stoneman.
Look good though. They did look good in patches.
I mean, Vince.
Gorgeous.
I've got this theory on Vince, which I probably can't write, but I can say on this podcast of this, but he's just the biggest cock tease in cricket. He never ever puts out. He gives you
eyes.
He gives you that fumble.
Yeah.
Getting a little bit excited, and then it never quite happens.
Some of the cover drives. He's actually the perfect grade cricketer. Like he made 25, 30.
25. So that is right bang in the middle of the James Vince at sliding scale.
Yeah, yeah.
But also the really funny thing I find about him is that you'll see a lot in grade cricket, but the pretty 30s club or the pretty 25s club, most of them are left-handers. And then there he is, defying logic, doing it as a right-hander. You should, normally these guys, I'd put Usman probably in the pretty 30s club as well. But
so
he
beautiful.
Makes sense because he's a left-hander. He goes across him, he's playing for the cut.
Well, left-handing, batting's cheating.
Batting's cheating, yeah.
Yeah,
batting's cheating.
I don't know why they didn't outlaw it. But, with Vince, right-handers are supposed to be, they shouldn't be that sexy.
No.
And they should also be more sort of disciplined. They should be more straight and sensible. And yet there he is every single
Fighting
time.
The odds.
Giving us the moment, giving us those... you're sort of rubbing your knees and you're getting excited. And then the widest ball he gets all day, he nicks off again. It's the most frustrating.
Just giving you eyes all day across the bar and then goes home with himself.
So let's talk about the team selection. So Mason Crane is in.
Yes.
Are you excited by Mason Crane? Do you think you should have played earlier? What's your take on this?
It's really tricky.
Team?
So I'm Mason Crane's biggest fan.
Right.
I know him a bit. He's a great lad. He's 20 and he bowls leg spin. There is going to be a pine over. There's also going to be an absolute beauty in over. He's got big balls. He's brave and he tosses it up and he goes for it. He would credit Sydney grade cricket with his rise and Stuart McGill. I probably wouldn't have played him earlier. They could have probably on that last day in Melbourne. They probably were looking at it going, well, the leggy would have been handy here, wouldn't it? But actually, there was barely a mark on the pitch and wasn't anything there. So
a lot of talk about whether playing him is a good move for his
career.
Yeah,
it's like a throwaway. It's tricky because for Sydney Test, England have managed to do is they haven't fallen apart in this series. Mm. They went 3-0 down. They haven't at any stage been totally abysmal. But what they have brilliantly managed to do is come to Sydney with a very England in Sydney bowling attack. So they've got their two greatest ever bowlers. They've got a bloke who's played one game, Tom Curran, who bowls 80 miles per hour and didn't look that threatening in his first test. They've got a debutant leg spinner, and then they've got Moeen Ali, who, he's gone for the series, essentially. He'll come back, but he's gone for now. So it's just like a really sort of weird thrown together team. I think it was the right time to play Crane. I think running drinks for a whole tour is pretty dispiriting. And if they do, Bayliss, England coach, New South Wales, long history there. He reckons it's going to turn. And they always had him as soon as he played for New South Wales in March. They had this game in mind, but it was that early.
Right.
So while it is a bit of a hospital pass to be thrown in at this stage, it's also another thing. It's depressing to go back to it, but it's another issue that goes back to Ben Stokes. If Ben Stokes had been here earlier, he quite possibly would have been batting number five now, and you can then afford to... You've got that bowling in the top five, you can throw Crane in a bit further down. But they haven't got that. So.
Yeah, I mean, so you sort of make a good point about, you know, England haven't fallen apart. I mean, it is 3-0 and may well be 4-0 by the end of this
probably,
test match.
Almost definitely will be.
Almost definitely will
by
be.
By Sunday.
But, yeah, England haven't fallen apart. They haven't been abysmal at any point, to use your exact words, not even paraphrase. So, I mean, how is this tour gone for England, given that, and then where are they going? They're going to New Zealand's next, right? Yeah. So, like, I think actually it's going to be a really interesting series.
That'll
but are they in good shape, do you think? Like, where are England at as we stand?
Well, there's this weird thing that, you know, 6 months ago, if you'd said to me, how do England thrive in Australia, how are they going to get anything out of this series? I would have said, well, they've got all-rounders for days. You know, they've got Stokes, Bairstow, Moeen, Wokes, and now all of the bowling ones have gone.
Yeah.
And you've just got Johnny Bairstow standing there, and he's a keeper. You know, so he's, is he an all-rounder? Beyond debate. the great strength has disappeared. I don't know why they haven't, fallen apart, really. They probably should have done. They went 3-0 down quickly. But I think Root's done quite a good job of sort of galvanising them, and they've had a bit of a siege mentality that everyone's after them and we're just going to get on with stuff. And they've stayed pretty cheerful. And I think also the other thing is that they're not actually up against Australian juggernaut.
So
it's not like Johnson, is it?
Yeah, well, I was going to ask you, so like to get your perspective, like do you think this scoreline flatters Australia a little bit, or to the degree that like the Australian public certainly think that this is now the greatest team that Australia's ever produced? Like where do you see as Australia at in terms of, you know, on the world stage?
Well, it's like James Anderson got a lot of shit before the Melbourne test when he said, look, they've got three gun bowlers, but get one of them out of the side, and then, you know, with Pattinson injured, Coulton, Isle, Barron, whoever injured, there's not much left. And then Jackson Bird came in, and I think he was proved exactly right. You know, so Australia,
we were deeply offended as a nation.
Yeah, that was a real
one
slight.
One thing we pride ourselves on is this, three prong pace attack.
And the theory was, I think, that if you've got three, you've got 30.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a bit
we've got plenty of blokes out the back who can do just the same thing.
I spoke to Stuart McGill yesterday, and we were talking about leg spin, and he said, everyone thinks Australia's got loads of legs, but it's because me and Warnie did it for a few years. So you assume because we're at two, there must be 25, knocking
clones,
them out. There weren't. Yeah.
The same thing.
But I think this Australian team is one with maybe six really good players. For four bowlers, Smith and Warner. And then Tim Payne's a good cricketer. The Marshes are fine. But, you know, holes elsewhere.
Yeah.
And having a really good bowling attack has covered for major deficiencies. I don't think Bancroft, Khawaja have outplayed their opposite numbers, even their opposite numbers have been quite disappointing. You know, it's just been a few blokes who are perfect for these conditions just being far too good for England in those conditions. And I think England will win the Ashes in 2019.
Mm. Have we ruined any careers, though? I mean,
no, Lyon promised that he would. And Broad and Cook looked like they were looking over the cliff. But then they've sorted that out in Melbourne. Moeen, is it terminal? I don't know. It looks just like a bit.
What to do about Moeen?
Yeah, it's real.
So I'm just sensing in the room that this series is just nothing. Nothing. Like, it's not a whitewash. No one's career's been ended. Steve Smith's performed very, very well. But, like, the whole series, like, there's no narrative to this. We can't take anything away other than maybe, like, England won't have won a test match in two.
Well, it's tough because we view everything through binary prisms.
Yes.
It's either a massive whitewash or a catastrophe, collapse, a la Hobart last
year.
And
also, as soon as Australia go 3-0 up, the narrative says that nothing matters. So you score 244 not out and carry the bat.
We slide into
existential sport. You score your fifth double 100 in test cricket, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Dead rubber runs, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Who was that? Did someone score some?
No.
Mitch Marsh.
Well, let's move away from that, and let's just look back, should I say, at your own experiences here as a young journalist touring Australia. You arrived here in October, fresh-faced. Still are, to your credit. You're obviously still shaving. And a good salad to boot. But if you can kind of just run us through the tour so far. You've been on tour for quite a while now.
Yeah, this is venue 8. So we did Perth.
Yeah.
We've done about 3 weeks in each of Perth and Adelaide. So I think that's, you wonder why the England boys were getting in Barbara. Give the blokes a chance. Give them a week in Sydney. Yeah. Early doors. Teasing. We were talking on the way over. I went to the bar that England players kept getting in trouble in Johnny Bairstow delivered a nuzzle, I'm going to call it.
Yeah.
Their heads touched.
Yeah, their heads met.
Briefly.
Their heads met. As Trevor Bayer said, their heads met, but it was not a headbutt. And then Ben Duckett poured a drink. Well, was involved in some dousing. It wasn't alone. I don't think he acted alone, but he took the fall. And the most remarkable thing about that whole story was that they was in the same bar. They let them go back to the same bar. Anyway, being an opportunist, I spotted an opportunity after day one in Perth to go to that bar conduct a Pulitzer Prize winning review.
Hunter S. Thompson style.
I'm waiting for them to call these people. I don't know who the guys at Pulitzer are.
Will, read the circuit.
But I'm waiting to hear from them. And I went, and remarkably, I saw, and I won't name them because it's not fair, but I saw two English county cricketers in this bar.
Yeah.
Even when it was like the one place on tour which English people now should not go.
But that just makes it so much more appealing. Yeah. There's a seductive lure about that.
I took two accomplices, Adam Collins and Jonathan Liu from The Independent, and we went and we were given a guided tour, and then we basically...
Company credit card?
Yes, expensed. Yeah. just ran through every dream I had to offer, and we were... I'm 27, and James Anderson has been to this bar twice now, and he's 35. Yeah. And I could say with some confidence that I, at 27, was 8 years older than the average age, at least. So what Anderson was doing about that, he was, and by all accounts had a great time. So despite getting a bit wet. You win some, you lose some, don't you? So that's been the highlight of my tour.
Yeah.
In the absence of an England win.
And now you're here in Sydney, in the unofficial capital of Australia.
Yeah.
And in Rose Bay, and enjoying yourself.
Rose Bay, lovely, lovely spot. Yeah, I'm loving it. The tour ends in 6 days, nearly done.
So you're nearly done. So 6 days left. I mean, is there one more circuit left in you and the rest of the UK?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of big runs for the English. But there's a lot of fingers crossed for a 4 day or a 3 day if we can get it. Yeah. But the rain probably put paid to the hope of 3 day.
Are you circuiting with Atherton? Is he circuiting? Is he out? Is he just going to Gideon Hay's
Occasionally,
house?
No, he does it.
Because the times line up is yourself and Athers and Gideon Hay riding a bit and getting syndicated.
So we've got,
it's a strong
Athers lineup. He has his moments. There's a good one in Townsville and a good one in Melbourne, which I remember. But he.
Do you get invited out with those guys?
They spent Christmas together, you know.
Yeah,
They've got far more interesting things to be doing than hanging out with their butler.
Well, we're very happy to have you here, Will. It's been a pleasure. And hope you enjoy the rest of the test match and the rest of your tour here. And hopefully we can squeeze in a few beers and potentially a circuit before you leave.
Sounds great.